Hi, this is Michael Sorrell, president of Paul Quinn College, and I want to welcome you to the Texas Tribune Tripcast. I am excited to be coming down to Austin in September and participating in the Texas Tribune Festival, and I hope that I'll see you there. So without any more ado, here's today's Tripcast.
Thank you, President Sorrell. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tripcast for the very first week of August. Joining me is CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hey, Reeve.
Executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Ben Philpott of KUT and the Texas Tribune.
Hello.
We're all kind of jaunty for a late election night. You know, we came in here
this
morning.
It wasn't that bad, actually. It came in, you know, I thought election nights go.
I thought maybe you were excited about the upcoming Tribune Festival like President Sorrell is.
Oh, I'm pretty excited about the festival, but no, that's for another day. They called the Lozano, by which I mean we called the Lozano race pretty late. The last couple of races got called, you know, not long before midnight.
But right? Before midnight.
But I guess that's not that late at night.
To our friends in B, Cook, Harris, and whatever that other county was.
The election returns.
Could you do it a little faster next time, please?
You guys suck.
Hello?
Truly. We can put a man on the moon, but we can't get election returns in a timely fashion.
Well, put a man on my iPhone, but
maybe they just wanted to watch Michael Phelps win his, you know, record-setting medal.
They clearly weren't involved in the election. It was pretty weird.
Well, they were on tape delay of their own, right? That was a version of tape delay.
Exactly. Yeah.
They were just making sure no dead people were voting.
So it was a pretty great night. You know, if you are in the news business, you have a couple of these a year, and goodness, it was a fun night to watch all this.
It was great. It was interesting. There were some unexpected results and some, you know. It had it all. It was fun.
What was the most unexpected result?
I think the margin of Cruz's win was surprising to me. Over the place were saying, you know, it could go this way, it could go that way, and a lot of people thought Cruz was going to win this thing. But I didn't talk to anybody before the race who thought anybody was going to win that race by 12 points.
Well, he won by 14, in fact. Right. It ended up being a margin of 14. I said yesterday I thought it was going to be Cruz by 4, and apparently I was one syllable off. 14. It tells you, and also the vote flipped. If you look at the numbers, the raw votes from the primary to the runoff, it literally just flipped over.
Right.
We have seen this time and again. We've talked about this on this podcast, but it's a fact of life in politics that if you're the incumbent or you're the de facto incumbent, as Dewhurst was in this case, and you don't get to 50% in the first round, you are at great peril of all the not you votes coalescing around the person who gets in the runoff with you. So that Dewhurst got 40, what did he get in the first round?
44%. Yeah.
He did worse on a percentage basis this time than he did last time, right?
Slightly.
And in fact, it seems like the great majority of the not Dewhurst votes in the first round were not Dewhurst votes in the second round. And Cruz was the beneficiary of that. I don't know that at this point Cruz winning is a surprise. I agree the margin of victory is a surprise. Had Dewhurst actually pulled this out at the end, that would have been an upset.
Well, you know, I thought
based
that,
on the trend line.
The early voting results in Dallas County were, I mean, yeah, I thought Cruz was going to win too, but the early voting totals from Dallas County were kind of that first, this might be an early night. When they came back, it was essentially 50-50 with Cruz slightly ahead. This was a county that was a third,
right,
in the primary. And
a third Dew, a third Cruz, and a third Leopard.
Yeah. And then Leopard endorses Cruz. So, you know, if Dewhurst,
Leopard endorses Dewhurst.
I'm sorry, Dewhurst, yes. Yeah. And if Dewhurst was going to then have a run at this, he would need that third to.
He needed to basically win that two-thirds to a third.
Right. And instead it was 50-50.
Got smacked in Houston, which is his geographic
base. Well, I mean,
base,
you know, there was a moment early on in the evening when you sort of looked at all the numbers and you said, you know, the counting clearly isn't over here. But there's not a piece of news here that's good for Dewhurst. You know, the Tarrant County numbers came in, and Denton and Collin, and then Montgomery. Later, Houston came in. The Dallas numbers, as you said, didn't split right. It was just there wasn't any good
news. So my question is, did Cruz win? Did Dewhurst lose? Or was this entirely about external factors driving the narrative?
Well, you know, this race played out as Cruz described it in January. He said in January, look, I've got to do, you know, the odds are heavily against me. They're heavily in favor of Dewhurst. I'm not running against Dewhurst right now. I'm running against Leppert and James. And he got a couple of gifts. One of them was that they delayed the primary from March to May, and there was a bunch of time there. And the other one, I think, was that Dewhurst ran a singularly awful campaign. That campaign just never got its footing at all. They ran a Rose Garden campaign for a candidate that he's not a household name. He's not Perry can't walk through a grocery store, but Dewhurst can. He'd be the tallest guy in the grocery store.
How often do you think Dewhurst walks through the grocery store?
Not that often. But I'm just saying,
I've actually seen Ted Cruz in Randall's, so I can speak from experience that he shops.
Cruz executed his plan. He talked to every group of more than four people in the state. You know, he worked his tail off. He had a bunch of time. He was running against, Dewhurst, a lousy campaign, and he won that first round like he wanted to, and then
closed. We can't completely dismiss the idea that the Republican base is looking for something different. You can say it's because of the Tea Party movement or because of whatever, but I mean the Republican base clearly in this race, at least, and in some of the other local races, was not interested in anybody who was the incumbent.
So the question is, did Cruz get in the race and luck out, or did Cruz see that and take advantage of it?
I mean, I think it's, I don't know, 50-50. I don't know what the split would be, but I mean, you can't dismiss the fact that Cruz, like you said, did go around to all these Republican groups for 18 months.
I think he saw it, and I think he was playing his hunch that, this is the mood voters were in. And, it worked out his way. Yeah, it was still, he said himself it was a long
but
shot.
But if that's the case, then you're exonerating on some levels the Dewhurst campaign, because you'd say, well, if that's the mood of the voters, there's nothing Dewhurst could have done to change that.
Yeah, you respond to the voters. You go out and do those events. And
But then you'd assume that Dewhurst could be somebody he isn't. Dewhurst walked into this race with a lot of advantages. Money, name ID, having run statewide before. He had that baronial look to him. He looked like a senator walking into a room the first time.
Right.
But he had one glaring disadvantage, one glaring weakness that was not mitigated, weirdly, by his campaign, and that is that the energized part of the Republican base did not trust him to be one of them. They never viewed him as one of them. And you think, knowing, obvious, that that was a glaring weakness, they would have worked very, very hard from the very beginning to mitigate that. But instead, they ran this Rose Garden strategy. They ran basically like he was an incumbent. They kept him in a box for 4 months. I think Ted Cruz was talking about at one point 39 or 40 Tea Party forums around the state that Dewhurst declined to go to.
Right.
You run toward your problem, not away from it. And it seems like what the Dewhurst campaign did not do was anything approaching enough to mitigate the glaring weakness in his campaign that threatened to overshadow, and I think ultimately did overshadow, the advantages.
Well, and especially when you're talking about all those events where the only voice that these Republican groups got to hear from was Cruz, have a rebuttal to the things that Cruz is saying about Dewhurst. Yeah. You can't have any chance to offer your own view of what Cruz is saying. And then, of course, Cruz comes in at the end with money and support from some outside groups to put up attack ads that are just reinforcing what he said to all these Republican groups all across the state. And
Dewhurst got an unfair shake, I think, out of this. Look, he owns the fact that he lost, and his campaign especially owns the strategy that was behind the loss. But Dewhurst got an unfair shake out of this. Dewhurst ran a conservative Texas Senate the sessions he's been lieutenant governor. Only by the standards of Texas at the moment could you say that somehow David Dewhurst is a moderate.
I don't think it was an ideological race. I mean, I asked him in one of the debates.
You wrote that and you were right. Despite the fact that some people disagree with you, you were right.
I asked him in one of the debates, how would Senator Cruz be different from Senator Dewhurst? And the answers were sort of, there weren't really big differences. I think Dewhurst's problem here was
substance, right?
He didn't seem, you can go to a set of voters and say, I'm not necessarily your guy, but I'm receptive to you and I'm responsive to you. And Dewhurst didn't do that. He didn't go to that crowd and say, I'm listening to you. Show me. Cruz said, I'm one of you, and those guys aren't listening, and Dewhurst proved it.
I think it's arguable whether the negative campaigning against Cruz backfired against Dewhurst. There were some people who said that what the Dewhurst people said about Cruz was false. I don't think it was appreciably more false than what any candidate says in a race like this. I mean, there may have been some factual things, but I'm sure Cruz said some things about Dewhurst that were at least exaggerated.
It wasn't a talker, though. It was a sort of generic attack, and it wasn't the kind of thing where you kind of, you look at somebody and say, hey, did you hear the thing?
I just think that in the end, stylistically, it was this line that you had about the establishment versus the disestablishment.
Yeah.
The people who are electing the next senator, which is to say the Republicans, which is to say the base of the Republicans, turns out to vote in an election like this, so a subset of a subset of a subset. They want someone who's not going up there to get along.
Right.
They want somewhere who's someone whose idea of compromise is punch the other guy in the nose.
Right.
And David Dewhurst was not going to be that guy, and Ted Cruz is going to be that guy, and this was decided about temperament as much as ideology.
And even if it's viewed as a distortion of Dewhurst's record, there were enough things that the Texas Senate did or did not do to play into the idea of this guy's not going to go up to the Senate, to the U.S. Senate, and punch people in the nose. You know, we had a chance to kick the TSA in the ass, and we didn't. We had a chance to shut down those borders and tell the federal government to leave us alone, and we didn't. We had a chance to shut down sanctuary cities, and we didn't.
Right.
Now, obviously, you know, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but again, he wasn't there at any of these Republican groups to say, well, wait a minute.
But of course, the difference, unlike Strauss, who became Speaker because the members voted for him, Dewhurst was an elected statewide official. You know, he ran for statewide office. He stood for statewide office, and
four
the Republicans supported him.
Four times.
You know, you get the government you get.
Right.
In that case.
Right.
I just think it's an amazing come down for Dewhurst, who had this thing, it was assumed, in his pocket. You know, it was his race to lose times 10.
Well, and plus he made himself, you know, hey, he's invincible.
Well, now he is, and I really do wonder what happens. I mean, I know that there's going to be a lot of discussion of what happened, but I'm really interested as much in what happens.
Right, what is he coming down to?
Does he stay, first of all, does he stay in office and serve as lieutenant governor during the next session? Does he run for election in 2014? I mean, we didn't have but 8 seconds after that race was called. Jerry Patterson texted us.
Right, I've got it open. I've got great respect for Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst. However, I'm running for Lieutenant Governor in 2014. This is a text from Jerry Patterson.
My question is, what's Todd Staples doing? What's Susan Combs going to do? They all endorse Dewhurst.
Right.
Are they all now going to take the position, well, he's street meat. We're going to run for 2014 anyway.
Well, Jerry Patterson's already run against him once. Jerry Patterson's already seen this movie.
Jerry Patterson thinks he's not running again.
Well, but Patterson ran against him for land commissioner in 1998 and got outspent, you know, a bazillion to one, and made it a close race. I mean, in some ways that was, you know, kind of an early blueprint for what Cruz did.
But do you think that, I mean, in terms of a blueprint of this race, do you think that those four candidates, Cruz, I mean, Dewhurst, Combs, Patterson, and Staples, I mean, are we looking at one of them for 2014, or is there some unknown at 1%?
Well, that's a really good point.
Well, that's right, because the fact is the same rules may apply.
Right.
All those guys have been professional politicians.
Yeah. Well, Patterson's the one, I think, of that group who is most likely to pull off this kind of insurgent thing. I mean, he's been in that group for a long, long time. He told me, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, you know, I'm kind of the spokesman for the black helicopter guys.
I think what Ben's talking about, I don't want to put words in Ben's mouth. I think what Ben's talking about is, do you see a Ted Cruz-style somebody who is not in...
You know, like a David Simpson who's just like shown up out of nowhere.
Right. Somewhere at Harvard Law School right now.
Incubating in a petri dish
right.
is the next lieutenant governor of Texas.
Well, and it may be somebody that we would know. I mean, somebody like a Simpson who might run for lieutenant governor, or Dan Patrick. I mean, we know these people, and yes,
Louis Gohmert.
Why not?
Couldn't be that lucky. We in the news business could not be that lucky to have Louis Gohmert for...
I think move number one would be to put the press table somewhere in the hallway.
Right. Louis Gohmert might have to just eliminate YouTube before he runs for his.
But
next
I do.
House.
But I do think it's. I think that what happened last night. If you don't want to read too much into it, don't. But I'll read enough into it to say this: is that the table was overturned. So any assumptions we were making about 2014 for any office have now got to be reconsidered. Anything.
Right. Well, and the idea in the Republican Party has been for a couple of decades now. This is the natural order of things. You wait for this one to get out of the way, and then you move up. Mm-hmm. And you wait for this one to get out of the way, and then you move up. This disturbs the natural order of things. This means the entrepreneur can come in and disrupt the organization.
And by the way, the Democrats, who don't have a prayer in hell of winning an election in 2014 at the statewide level, ought to just take a lesson from last night and say, enough with recycling the same old people. We need an entirely new crop of people. Let's just put the ball in the end zone like Doug Flutie, because we're not going to be any worse off if we don't.
Right.
You know, last night, Gilberto Hinojosa, who's the chair of the Democratic Party of Texas, compared Ted Cruz to Sharon Angle in a press release. You know, no, factually, substantively. However, I give him style points because at least there was a pulse that was visible on the monitor last night at the moment that this happened. But the Democrats have got to figure – I mean, again, you know, the day began yesterday with Julian Castro and it ended with Ted Cruz. This is a great time to be doing what we do.
Pretty fun.
And, you know, you saw the polls, the opposite polls, ideologically, on display yesterday. But the problem for the Democrats is Ted Cruz is in the leadership of the Republican Party in Texas and now nationally kind of, right. In essence, immediately. Julian Castro is still nascent.
We'll see how his speech goes.
We'll have to see how his speech goes. But the point is Democrats don't have anybody right now
in Texas.
Who can go in Texas? Who can go toe to toe with these with the new crop of people who are being?
Are you calling the November election already?
For Ted Cruz against Sadler?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There's not that much.
Honestly, yes, I am.
Right. Did you see that was sort of a meme that some people tried to get going last night? This is what the Democrats have wanted.
I respect Chairman Sadler. He gave a great interview to us a couple months ago at the Austin Club. There is not a chance in hell that he is going to win that race in November.
He's got 98 days. They don't have a statewide organization. They don't have the money as of yesterday. You know, how are you going to do this? I mean, show me the business plan. It's not, you know.
Did you see the press release he put out announcing his, you know, after he was declared that had the satellite coordinates on it? I think it was had something more to do with the interview, but it looked like he was talking to us from Neptune. He has more of a chance of being the U.S. Senator from Neptune than he does of being the U.S. Senator from Texas. And that's just a bet. Not about Sadler, who's a nice guy. This state is not going to elect a Democrat to the United States Senate. Full stop. Not this cycle. It is not.
Which cycle is it going to be?
Well, I mean, I tweeted this morning that I'm looking forward to covering the Ted Cruz versus Joaquin Castro race. Hashtag tweets from 2018. You know, I do think that that if you get out 6 years, the Democrats have the potential both from a demographics and from a change in the pendulum swing and from a bench standpoint.
Right.
You'll have some more. Look, Pete Gallego beating Ciro yesterday puts another potential statewide candidate in play in a future election. I don't think Ciro is ever going to be a statewide candidate. I think Pete will.
This is going to be
potentially could
this,
be.
This congressional race between Gallego and Canseco
is going to be
going to be a national
great
race.
We don't have a lot of contested elections in November that anybody gives a crap about.
We got two in Congress.
This is a really good one.
Right.
It's a really good one.
The other one in Congress is going to be Nick Lampson and Randy Weber. Ron Paul seat.
That's going to be a good race.
The only Senate race is going to be the Wendy Davis race in Fort Worth.
Wendy Davis, Mark Shelton will be a real race.
And there's only out of the 150 House races, 88. Are already elected. They don't have major party opposition. And only, and I'm being generous here, only about a dozen of the remaining races are competitive.
Plausibly competitive. Yvonne Gonzalez and Jan Lozano.
Right.
Joe Moody and DeMargo. Help.
It goes down the list. There's
Villalba and Carol Kent.
Right, right.
Is one.
The Ken Sheets race with Robert Miklos is another.
That's the refight of the previous
right,
one.
Right, right.
Because a bunch of these Republicans who are saying, oh, I got a race. And no, you don't have a race. Come on, cut that out. You don't have an actual race. But there are some actual races. I mean,
most of it's already determined. I mean, what we do know is we're going to have a Republican legislature. That's not going to change much.
Absolutely. That Smitherman and Christy Craddock are going to walk away with their races in the fall.
Right. Well, only one of them has an opponent. So the Democrats don't even have a candidate in one of those races.
So we really know that.
You're right.
But just because some of those races really do matter, though, just even though there are only a few of them. Like the Wendy Davis race is going to be a big deal for the Democrats in the Senate.
Well, look, and Trey's talking about Trey Martinez Fisher, chairman of MALC, and, you know, a prominent Democrat in what is an increasingly small number of Democrats in the House, is talking about them getting to somewhere between 55 and 65. That is a material difference, 55 or 65. And getting to 65 from 55, or frankly, even getting to 55, requires that they win some of these races. Connie Scott, Abel Herrero.
Craig Island has a race with Wayne Faircloth. Bobby Guerra and Miriam Martinez in that.
Bobby Guerra is going to win that race, don't you think?
But it's a race.
It's a race.
If you look at that district, that's a thing that could go R
Gonzalez district,
or D.
Right?
Right.
And she's a former Democrat who switched to file as a Republican in the primary.
Right. Lozano and Gonzalez-Torre. Donna Howard could have a race, depending on how Travis County goes. Robert Thomas. Dee Margo, Joe Moody in El Paso.
Oh, didn't her district get redrawn so that it was more Democratic?
It is more Democratic than it was. Depends on the year.
It's still West Travis County, but yes.
Last time she won.
Oh, I can't believe Donna Howard has a race in an Obama year?
So where we drew the line was, if a district favors statewide candidates of one party or the other by less than 12% over the last two cycles.
Who is Robert Thomas?
You're asking questions I haven't answered. He's a
Dan Neal, at least, had been a Denver Bronco and a UT football star.
Ken Sheets, that race. Cindy Burkett.
We're moving on.
I don't have it.
Apparently we are moving
Cortez,
on.
Philip Cortez and
Hold
John
it. You think Burkett's got a race?
I think it's on paper it's a competitive
Who's the
race.
Opponent?
Leighton Durham. I don't know much about him, but I'm just saying these are based on
district
kind of
numbers.
The numbers in the districts. Well, this is sort of a redistricting thing. Joe Farias might have a race. Pineda and Perez in the Legler seat.
Okay.
And Hubert Vaux might have a race. Diane Williams. Like I said,
Did you say Moody and Margo?
I did.
Yeah.
This is a widespread. Not all of these will be races. Something will be a race that's not on the list. But when you look at it, the point is only 12 or so of the 150 races are even plausibly competitive 100 days out.
So what does this mean for the leadership in the House? That's something we've been chatting about.
Well, look, Strauss has lost a lot of people who were with him last time in the course of this election cycle, either to departures from the House to go do something else, or defeats in the first round, or defeats in the second round. Does that mean Strauss is not going to be Speaker? No. Is Strauss a stronger candidate for another term of Speaker today than he was on May 28th? No, he's right. Not.
Lost a couple chairs.
He lost a bunch of chairs. You know, whoever would have imagined that Sid Miller's departure would be a net negative for Strauss?
Well, they're at 40,
but it is.
They're at 40 now. The number of House members who, for various reasons, are not coming back is 40.
And you add that 40
there were about
to the 35, 36 last time. We are at
50%. Yeah, we're at half
of
the
House next session being freshmen or sophomores, which I think we're going to have an experience shortfall to go with a budget shortfall. And a lot of the people who left were committee chairs.
Right.
You know, Madden, Gallego, Eisler, Jim Jackson, kind of go down the list.
Yeah,
a
Miller.
Lot of people who are departing who were chairs and vice chairs of key committees and, you know,
Hochberg and Eisler.
Hochberg and Eisler both departing at the same time is a big blow on public ed. Look, there's a lot of stuff going on in the House that the Speaker... This isn't a great time to be running that House, I think. I think it's a time of some uncertainty.
So that's got that problem. Perry's back from a loss. Dewhurst is back from a loss.
And the composition of the Senate is going to see, if not unprecedented, then remarkable.
Breakfast
change.
With those three is going to be kind of glum at the
beginning. Think about, we've said this before, but we know more now. Think about this. In the Senate now, to go with the Patrick and Birdwell wing of the party, and you might want to sometimes lump in Tommy Williams and Jane Nelson and Robert Nichols and Joan Huffman kind of in that same quadrant. You now will have Paxton, Taylor, Schwertner.
Campbell.
And Hancock.
Hancock, yeah.
And possibly Mark Shelton, depending upon the outcome of the Wendy Davis race. Right. All of a sudden, the Kel Seliger, John Corona, Robert Duncan, Kevin Eltife wing of the Republican Party in the Senate is the fringe.
So will the Senate have a two-thirds rule next session?
I think they will. I mean, that's the, you know, I think they will. It just the two-thirds rule.
We should explain what that is.
Is a rule that says you have to have two-thirds of the senators to bring something up. And, you know, they use it almost all the time, except in extraordinary cases where the lieutenant governor doesn't want to. but it's really where a senator's, you know, if you sort of get into the parliamentary details of the thing, it's where each senator's power comes from, because they might be, you know, because there's not just a vote up or down on an issue, there's also a vote on whether to bring it up. And it means that the people that go to them for their favor have to play that game. It's where, and I don't think they're going to forfeit that power.
And the question is, does David Dewhurst matter? Does David Dewhurst in this Senate matter?
Well, the question
coming
is,
coming off of this loss with his political career, if not coming to an end after this session, but the end is visible on the horizon, yeah. just do the demographics, right? I mean, the fact is, does Dewhurst have any ability to run this thing when you got this Senate with these people
yeah,
in it.
Yeah, because the first day he's going to, you know, the first before they can do anything, he gets to name the committees. The question is whether this Senate would vote to change the rules to take the power away from the lieutenant governor, and I don't think we're there. So what does he have? He gets to name all the committees and who gets to play. He gets to decide which committees hear the bills, and he gets to decide which bills are going to come up in the Senate.
Do you think he comes back a changed lieutenant governor now that he doesn't have to position himself to run for anything else?
I don't know that he's not going to position himself to run for anything else. There's still the hanging question of whether the governor's going to run for re-election and who's going to move up, and you've got to have a lieutenant governor included in that conversation.
All right, Ross, here's the $64,000 question then, okay?
Here we go.
You're Greg Abbott. You are looking at a situation in 2014 in which both Rick Perry and David Dewhurst are running for re-election. You are Greg Abbott.
Yeah.
Do you run against Perry? Do you run against Dewhurst? Or do you do neither?
You run for the job you want.
So you run against Perry.
You run. If you really want to be governor, there's no point in running for something else. You might as well run for governor. So Greg Abbott sets up with, how much is in his bank account now? Is it 14?
$8 zillion.
He's bigger than the rainy day fund. He's a giant. I don't know what Perry's going to do. I think some of that depends on how the presidential race comes out. You know, Perry's telling everybody he's going to run for governor again, sort of hinting at that. You know, he's never done that and sort of gone the other way. He's pretty, you know, what he says is pretty much what he does. So I assume he's running again. And if you're Greg Abbott, you have to say, well, do I want to wait and give everybody else time to catch up with me? You know, all these other potential competitors. And maybe run against some rich guy who we don't even know his name yet? Or do I want to just take the devil I know and run against Rick Perry?
I still think that what this cycle showed is that at the moment, the Republican base is absolutely fine with electing someone who has no name ID and no money, but who shows up to a lot of meetings. I guess Abbott can show up to meetings and Perry can show up to meetings, but, you know, so can Donna Campbell.
What's interesting about Abbott and Perry is that neither one of those guys is likely to run a Rose Garden strategy. And I don't think Rose Garden strategies are going to be very popular in the post-Dewhurst world.
Not anymore. You know,
but it
that
just,
didn't work.
I think it's, you know, just having that I by your name.
Come back to Perry for a second. So there was a lot of chatter last night about how this had been an awful night for Perry at the end of an awful year for Perry. I think that's overblown for a bunch of reasons. I think that it was an awful year for Perry's consultants.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad year.
For Perry's consultants.
For those guys.
But someone said, well, Rick Perry's now going to be a weakened politician or a weakened governor. How is that exactly? How is Rick Perry going to be any weaker for having supported Dewhurst and Dewhurst losing?
This was the same storyline that Perry's foes were saying after the 2000
wishful thinking.
Six election. You know, you only got 39%. The legislature doesn't like
him. You know
what
you call
a
guy who gets 39% in that race?
Governor.
Governor.
Right. You know,
but at the same time, of all the possible outcomes of the various races this year, he did seem to come out on the losing end.
Right. Majority of the time. But that and 50 cents will get you Coke. I mean, the fact is,
nothing
happened.
Where
weaker,
are you buying Coke?
At a secret cheap store. Where does Rick Perry become a weaker governor out of all this?
Yeah,
he still has all his committee chairs. I mean, not his committee chairs, agency heads.
Yeah.
Isn't it just as Ross said earlier, he's shown that he is invincible.
But, you know, Perry hasn't been vincible in a state election. And the two things that you look at, let's go back to Greg Abbott for a minute. If you're Greg Abbott and you say, am I going to run against Rick Perry? He really didn't do well in that presidential race, but Kay was the most popular Republican in Texas at the beginning of the race where he beat her.
With no rough edges.
And she had all this money and. And, you know, I mean, there's a million reasons to do it and a million reasons not to, but I don't think Perry is weak or vulnerable is really one of the better reasons. It may be that, you know, you go to him and you say, look, this guy's been governor for a long time. Let's change. It's the Wendell Willkie, FDR campaign.
One big reason to run against someone like Perry is if you are ideologically or temperamentally in a different place than he is. And Abbott and Perry are much closer in place than Kay and Perry were.
Right. That's true.
So there'd have to be an intellectual framework for an Abbott campaign against Perry other than that begins with something other than I wanna. And I just don't know that Abbott's got a case to make to the base that likes Perry. He may bet, and he may bet correctly, that we have Perry fatigue and then it's time for somebody else and so on. Remember when Watson ran against Barrientos?
Yeah.
Watson decided that by the mere fact of his running, he suspected correctly that there was Barrientos fatigue in this, you know, in Barrientos' Austin Senate district. And he thought, Barrientos is not going to dislodge himself, so I'm going to get in this race, and I'm going to make noise about getting in this race, and I'm going to essentially force Barrientos' hand. Abbott could play that card with Perry. But I don't know that Perry is going to fold or, you know, crumble in the face of Perry. We know about Perry, the opposite seems to be true.
Well, you know, when Perry was going to run for governor, there were a number of other Republicans who said, I'm going to run for governor, and Perry's response to them was, instead of, you know, if you're going to run, I'm not going to run, it was, well, I'll see you in the primary.
You mean lieutenant governor, or you mean governor?
Lieutenant governor, I'm sorry, right. When Perry was, you know, running for that, David Dewhurst was talking about it, and, you know, Perry said, okay, we'll see you in the primary.
I think for the Twitterverse, it would be great to see Abbott and Perry race.
Not just the Twitterverse, the actual honest-to-goodness, real-time
the
human
verse.
Beings and
well, just they're the two,
interacting in person.
They're two of the most active politicians on Twitter.
They are, although the governor last night tweeted something about how Texas is hashtag stronger than
nobody
garlic.
Knows this
nobody
phrase.
Knows
I believe
this phrase.
I don't get you guys.
Garlic smells.
Stronger than 40 acres
what
of garlic. You've never
mean?
Heard this?
I've never heard that phrase.
Well,
isn't that what they Aggies refer to UT?
You three aren't from here,
is
are
that
you?
A Rossism?
No. Welcome to West Texas, ladies and gentlemen.
If people out there have heard this phrase.
Hashtag.
Then they can email they heard
that was
it.
His transition to the end of the podcast.
Or they can.
And before we go, we got to remind everyone that if they want to come see Tribcast live next week, instead of just listening to it on their iPod or Android device,
which you've got to admit is not the ideal way to listen to this thing.
No, absolutely not. You got to come to the Cactus Cafe over at the University of Texas at 6 o'clock this coming Tuesday. And we'll have Tribcast live there at the Cactus Cafe.
Todd Weissman, our producer, and I will be trotting out for the first time in public our Ted Cruz impressions.
Oh, that'll be great.
We could have one now.
I don't.
We could have a big Ted Cruz impersonation contest there after the Tribcast at the Cactus Cafe.
The one bit of advice I'll give anybody who wants to do an impression of Ted Cruz is just really punch the word liberty really hard. Just hit liberty. That's the most important thing. Liberty.
All right. If you'd like to RSVP to the Cactus Cafe or send any questions
but
or comments.
You should come anyway, right?
Yeah. The email address is tribcast@texastribune.org. On behalf of Evan, Ben, Ross, and Todd, our producer, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Look, you got to start everything with look, Reeve, look.